This is Library on the Go, brought to you by the Cortez Public Library as part of our program to improve childhood literacy. I'm Ms. Laura.
And I'm Ms. Barbara.
And today Ms. Barbara is going to continue Wind in the Willows.
Yes, this is a continuation of The Wind in the Willows by Kenneth Graham. And if you remember our last story, Ratty and Mole were returning from an outing with Otter when Mole smelled something very familiar. It was his old home, and at first Ratty didn't hear him when Mole asked him to come back. But when he learned what was the matter, Ratty insisted that they turn back and find Mole's house. And they come to a little door that says, Mole End. Mole reached down a ladder from a lantern from a nail on the wall and lit it, and the rat, looking round him, saw that they were in a sort of forecourt. A garden seat stood on one side of the door, and on the other a roller, for the mole, who was a tidy animal, could not stand having his ground kicked up into earth heaps. On the wall hung wire baskets with ferns in them, brackets carrying plaster statuary, Garibaldi and the infant Samuel, and Queen Victoria, and other heroes of modern Italy. Down one side of the forecourt ran a skittle alley with benches along it and little wooden tables. In the middle was a small pond containing goldfish and surrounded by a cockle shell border. Out of the center of the pond rose a fanciful erection clothed in more cockle shells and topped by a large silvered glass ball that reflected everything all wrong and had a very pleasing effect. Mole's face beamed at the sight of all these objects so dear to him, and he hurried Rat through the door, lit a lamp in the hall, and took one glance round his old house. He saw the dust lying thick on everything, saw the cheerless, deserted look of the long-neglected house and its worn and shabby contents, and collapsed again on a hall chair, his nose in his paws. "Oh, Ratty," he cried dismally, "why ever did I do it? Why did I bring you to this poor, cold place when you might have been at Riverbank with all your nice things about you?" The rat was running here and there, opening doors and cupboards, lighting lamps and candles, and sticking them up everywhere. "What a capital little house this is," he called out cheerily. "We'll make a jolly night of it. The first thing we want is a good fire. I'll see to that. You get a duster, Mole, and try and smarten things up a bit." Encouraged by his companion, the mole roused himself and dusted with energy, while the rat soon had a cheerful blaze rolling up the chimney. But Mole had another fit of the blues, dropping on a couch and burying his face in his duster. "Rat," he moaned, "you poor hungry animal, I've nothing to give you. Nothing, not a crumb." "What a fellow you are for giving in," said the rat. "Why, only just now I saw a sardine opener in the kitchen dresser, quite distinctly, and everybody knows that means there are sardines about somewhere. Come with me and forage." They went hunting through every cupboard and drawer, and the result was not so depressing after all, though of course it might have been better. A tin of sardines, a box of captain's biscuits, nearly full, and a German sausage in silver paper. The rat busied himself fetching plates, knives, and forks, and mustard, which he mixed in an egg cup, and had just got seriously to work with the sardine opener when sounds were heard from the forecourt without, like the scuffing of small feet in the gravel, and a murmur of tiny voices. "All in line. Hold the lantern up a bit, Tommy. No coughing after I say 1, 2, 3. Come on, we're all waiting." "What's up?" inquired the rat. "I think it must be the field mice," replied Mole, with a touch of pride in his manner. "They go around carol singing regularly at this time of year. They're quite an institution in these parts, and they never pass me over. They come to Mole End last of all, and I used to give them hot drinks and supper too sometimes when I could afford it. It will be like old times to hear them again." "Well, let's have a look at them," cried the rat, jumping up and running to the door. In the forecourt, lit by the dim rays of a horn lantern, some 8 or 10 little field mice stood in a semicircle, red worsted comforters around their throats, their forepaws thrust deep into their pockets, their feet jiggling for warmth. With beady eyes, they glance shyly at each other, sniggering a little, sniffling, and applying coat sleeves a good deal. As the door opened, their shrill little voices rose on the air, and this is the carol they sang. Villagers all, this frosty tide, let your doors swing open wide. The wind may follow and snow beside, yet draw us in by your fire to bide. Joy shall be yours in the morning. Here we stand in the cold and sleet, blowing fingers and stamping feet. Come from far away, you to greet, you by the fire, we in the street, bidding you joy in the morning. Well sung, cried Rat, and now come along in, all of you, and have something hot. Oh, yes, come along, field mice, cried the mole eagerly. You just wait a minute while we... Oh, Ratty, he cried in despair, whatever are we doing? We've nothing to give them. You leave all that to me, said the Rat. Here, you with the lantern. Are there any shops open at this hour of the night?
Certainly, sir, replied the field mouse respectfully. At this time of year, our shops keep open to all sorts of hours.
Then you go off at once, said the Rat, and get me... Here the mole only heard, fresh, mind. No, a pound will do. Only the best. If you can't get it there, try somewhere else. Of course, homemade, no tin stuff. Well, do the best you can.
There was a chink of coin passing from paw to paw. The field mouse was provided with a basket for his purchases, and off he hurried, he and his lantern. The rest of the field mice perched in a row on the couch with their legs swinging.
They act plays, too, the mole explained to the Rat. Make them up all by themselves. They gave us a capital one last year about a field mouse who was captured at sea and made to row in a galley. And when he escaped and got home, his lady love had gone into a convent. Here, you were in it, I remember. Get up and recite a bit.
The field mouse, addressed, got up on his legs and giggled shyly, looked around the room, and remained absolutely tongue-tied. His comrades cheered him on. Mole coaxed him, but nothing could overcome his stage fright. Then the door opened, and the field mouse with the lantern reappeared, staggering under the weight of his basket. In a few minutes, supper was ready, and Mole, as he took the head of the table, saw his little friends' faces brighten and beam as they fell to, and thought what a happy homecoming this had turned out, after all. As they ate, they talked of old times, and the field mice gave him the local gossip up to date, and answered as well as they could the 100 questions he had to ask them. The Rat said little or nothing, only taking care that each guest had what he wanted and plenty of it, and that Mole had no trouble or anxiety about anything. They clattered off at last with their jacket pockets stuffed with remembrance for the small brothers and sisters at home. When the door had closed on the last of them and the chink of the lantern had died away, Mole and Rat kicked the fire up, drew their chairs in, and discussed the events of the long day. At last the Rat, with a tremendous yawn, said, "Mole, old chap, I'm ready to drop. Sleepy is simply not the word. That your own bunk over on that side? Very well, then, I'll take this. What a ripping little house this is. Everything so handy." He clambered into his bunk and rolled himself well up in blankets, and slumber gathered him forthwith. The weary mole also soon had his head on his pillow, but before he closed his eyes he let them wander around his old room, mellow in the glow of the firelight that played on familiar and friendly things. He saw clearly how plain and simple, how narrow even, it all was, but clearly, too, how much it all meant to him. He did not at all want to abandon the new life, to turn his back on sun and air. The upper world was all too strong. It called to him still, even down there, and he knew he must return. But it was good to think he had this to come back to, this place which was all his own, these things which were so glad to see him again and could always be counted upon for the same simple welcome. We're going to pause here a minute and let Miss Laura have a station break.
That was uncanny. I was kind of anticipating that you were going to stop right there. This is how long we've been doing this.
Laura and I have spent too much time together.
And I hope it continues. This is Library on the Go on KSJD Cortez at 91.5, KZET Toyoak at 90.5, and KICO Rico at 89.5. We are also heard in Mancos at 91.1. and in Pleasant View at 90.9. That's a lot of call numbers. KSJD is member-supported, solar-powered community radio, heard across the Four Corners area from Rico to Shiprock, Mancos to Kayenta, and beyond. You can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and on the web at ksjd.org, and please like us on Facebook. 20. Read to a child. The most important 20 minutes of your day. And now let's find out what Ratty and Mole are going to do next.
This is Chapter 6, Mr. Toad. It was a bright morning in the early part of summer. The river had resumed its banks, and the hot sun seemed to be pulling everything green and bushy up out of the earth as if by strings. The mole and the water rat had been up since dawn, busy on matters connected with boats and the boating season. Painting and varnishing, mending paddles, repairing cushions, hunting for missing boat hooks, and so on, and were finishing breakfast in their little parlor and discussing their plans for the day when a heavy knock sounded at the door.
"Bother," said the rat, all over with egg. "See who it is, Mole, like a good chap, since you're finished."
The mole went to attend the summons, and the rat heard him utter a cry of surprise. Then he flung the parlor door open and announced with much importance, "Mr. Badger." This was a wonderful thing indeed that the badger should call on them, or on anybody. He generally had to be caught if you wanted him, as he slipped quietly along a hedgerow on an early morning, or a late evening, or else hunted up in his own house in the middle of the wood. The badger strode into the room and stood looking at the two animals with an expression full of seriousness.
"The hour's come," he said.
"What hour?" asked the rat uneasily, glancing at the clock.
"Whose hour, you should say," replied the badger. "Why, Toad's hour, the hour to take Toad in hand."
"Hooray," cried the mole delightedly. "We'll teach him to be a sensible toad."
"This very moment," continued the badger, "another new and exceptionally powerful motor car will arrive at Todd Hall on approval or return."
"We ought to do something," said the rat gravely. "He had another smash-up only last week, and a bad one. That coach house of his is piled to the roof with fragments of motor cars, none of them bigger than your hat."
"He's been in hospital 3 times," put in the mole. "And as for the fines he's had to pay, it's simply awful to think of."
"Yes," continued the rat, "Toad's rich, we all know, but he's not a millionaire, and he's a hopelessly bad driver, and quite regardless of law and order. Killed or ruined, it's got to be one of the two, sooner or later."
"We must be up and doing," said the badger, "ere it is too late. You two will accompany me instantly to Toad Hall."
"Right you are," cried the rat, starting up. "We'll rescue the poor animal."
"We'll take him seriously in hand," went on the badger. "We'll stand no nonsense whatever. We'll bring him back to reason, by force if need be. We'll make him a sensible toad."
They set off up the road on their mission and reached Toad Hall to find, as the badger had anticipated, a shiny new motor car of great size, painted a bright red, standing in front of the house. As they neared the door, it was flung open, and Mr. Toad, arrayed in goggles and cap and enormous overcoat, came swaggering down the steps.
"Hello, you fellows," he cried. "You're just in time to come for a jolly...
The badger strode up the steps.
"Take him inside," he said to his companions. Then he turned to the chauffeur in charge of the new motor car. "I'm afraid you won't be wanted today," he said. "Mr. Toad has changed his mind. He will not require the car."
"Now then," he said to the toad when the four of them stood in the hall, "first take off those ridiculous things."
"Shan't," replied the toad with spirit. "What is the meaning of this? I demand an explanation."
They had to lay Toad out on the floor, kicking and calling all sorts of names before they could get his motor clothes off of him bit by bit, and they stood him up on his legs again. Now he was merely Toad and no longer the terror of the highway, and he giggled feebly.
"You knew it must come to this sooner or later, Toad," the badger explained severely. "You've disregarded all the warnings we've given you. You're getting us animals a bad name in the district for your furious driving and your smashes and your rows with the police. But we never allow our friends to make fools of themselves beyond a certain limit, and that limit you have reached. You've also often asked us to come and stay with you, Toad. Well, now we're going to. When you are sorry for what you've done and see the folly of it, and you promise never to touch a motor car again, we may quit, but not before. Take him upstairs, you two, and lock him in his bedroom."
"It's for your own good, Toady," said the rat kindly, as Toad, kicking and struggling, was hauled upstairs by his two friends. "Think what fun we shall all have together, just as we used to, when you quite get over this painful attack of yours. No more of those incidents with the police," he said, as they thrust him into his bedroom. "No more weeks in hospital being ordered about by nurses," added the mole, turning the key on him. They descended the stairs, Toad shouting abuse at them through the keyhole.
"It's going to be a tedious business," said the badger, sighing. "I've never seen Toad so determined. However, we will see it out. He must never be left an instant unguarded. We shall take it in turns to be with him till the poison is out of his system."
They arranged watches accordingly. Each animal took turns to sleep in Toad's room at night, and they divided the day between them. At first, Toad was very trying to his guardians. He would arrange bedroom chairs in rude resemblance of a motor car and crouch on them, bent forward, staring fixedly ahead, making uncouth, ghastly noises, till the climax was reached when, turning a complete somersault, he would lie prostrate amidst the ruins of the chair, completely satisfied for the moment. As time passed, however, these seizures grew less frequent, and his friends strove to divert his mind into fresh channels. But his interest in other matters did not seem to revive, and he grew apparently languid and depressed. One fine morning, the rat, whose turn it was to go on duty, went upstairs to relieve Badger, whom he found fidgeting to be off and stretch his legs.
"Toad's in bed," he told the rat outside the door. "Can't get much out of him except, oh, leave him alone. Now, you look out, rat. When Toad's quiet, he's at his artfulest."
"How are you today, old chap?" inquired the rat cheerfully as he approached Toad's bedside. A feeble voice replied,
"Thank you, Ratty. So good of you to inquire. And how are you yourself and the excellent mole?"
"Oh, we're all right," replied the rat. "Mole is going out for a run with Badger, so you and I will spend a pleasant morning together. Now jump up, there's a good fellow."
"Dear rat," murmured Toe, "I'm far from jumping up. I beg you, step round to the village and fetch the doctor."
"What do you want a doctor for?" inquired the rat, coming closer and examining him. He certainly lay very still and flat, and his voice was weaker, and his manner changed.
"Surely you have noticed," murmured Toad. "Tomorrow, indeed, you may be saying, oh, if only I had noticed sooner, if only I had done something. But never mind, forget I ask."
"Look here, old man," said the rat, beginning to get rather alarmed. "Of course I'll fetch a doctor if you really want him."
"And would you mind," said Toad with a sad smile, "at the same time asking the lawyer to step up? There are moments, a moment, when one must face disagreeable tasks."
"A lawyer? He must be bad," the rat said to himself as he hurried from the room, not forgetting to lock the door behind him. "I've known Toad to fancy himself frightfully bad before, but I've never heard him ask for a lawyer. If there's nothing the matter, the doctor will tell him he's an old ass and cheer him up. I better go. It won't take long." So he ran off to the village on his errand of mercy. The Toad,
who had hopped lightly out of bed as soon as he heard the key turned in the lock, watched him from the window till he disappeared down the carriage drive. Then he dressed quickly in his smartest suit, filled his pockets with cash from a drawer, and next, knotting the sheets from his bed together and tying one end around the central post of his window, which formed such a feature of his bedroom, he scrambled out, slid to the ground, and taking the opposite direction to the rat, marched off whistling a merry tune. It was a gloomy luncheon for Rat when the badger and the mole returned. The badger's remarks may be imagined. Even the mole could not help saying, "You've been a bit of a duffer this time, Ratty. Toad, too, of all animals."
"Well, he did it awfully well," said the crestfallen rat.
"He did you awfully well," rejoined the badger hotly.
Meanwhile, Toad, gay and irresponsible, was walking along the high road some miles from home. At first, he had taken bypaths and crossed many fields and changed his course several times in case of pursuit. But now, feeling safe from recapture, and the sun smiling brightly on him, and all nature joining in a chorus of approval to the song of self-praise his own heart was singing, he almost danced along the road in his satisfaction and conceit.
"Smart piece of work, that," he remarked to himself, chuckling. "Poor old Ratty. My, but won't he catch it when the badger gets back. A worthy fellow, Ratty, but very little intelligence and no education. I must take him in hand some day and see if I can make something of him."
And we're going to leave it there until next week.
Mr. Boastful Toad.
Toad is so full of himself.
Let's see if he has his comeuppance in the next episode.
We won't say.
Miss Barbara's such a spoil sport.
Yes, I am.
I think Miss Barbara's going to do an Aesop's fable.
Yeah, we've got a short one here. Of course, all of Aesop's fables basically are short, but this one.
They're oldies but goodies.
Oldies, yeah. they all have a good lesson with them. And this one is called The Frog and the Ox. Some frogs were playing by the pool when an ox came down and accidentally stepped on one of them, crushing him to death. The other frogs ran to his mother to report the casualty. "Your son is dead," they told the mother frog. "He was trampled on by the biggest creature we've ever seen." The mother frog cried for her lost son. Then she turned to the other frogs and asked if the animal was really as big as they said. She puffed herself out as big as she possibly could. "Was he as big as this?" she asked. "Oh, much bigger," they said. The mother frog puffed herself out much more. "Was it as big as this, then?" she asked. "Yes, yes, much bigger, 100 times bigger. You could never puff yourself up as big as that creature," the frogs told her. The mother was annoyed that any creature should be bigger than she. So she puffed and puffed herself into a large ball until her eyes nearly popped out of her head. "I'm the biggest," she said. "I'm as big as that creature," she gasped with one last gigantic puff. And with that last gasp, there was a loud bang, and the mother frog burst and collapsed flat on the ground. And the moral of the story is, don't try to be bigger than you really are.
And she's kind of like Toad in a way.
I thought it was a very fitting thing to go along with Toad.
Well, it's funny because of being boastful and conceited and wanting to be the best. And here she's lost her son.
And she's worried more about who's bigger. Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, well.
I don't know. Yeah. That's why we tell these stories, because it hopefully invites conversation in your home and debate maybe on some subjects. We have our story times every Thursday at 10:30. And of course, we air here every Sunday at 3:30. You can also catch our archive shows on ksjd.org and also the Montelorus Early Childhood Council website. And we'd love for you to explore that a little bit. Please do. We're always taking story requests. We will have to use classics at this time because we have to use public domain stories. So please do contact us at the library and put in your request, and we'll mention your name on the air.
And I know that The Wind in the Willows is a very long story, but if you miss an episode or two, you can always go to the website and catch up on it.
Yes, that's an excellent point, Miss Barbara. And now we're going to play our music, and please join us for the next installation of Wind in the Willows with our favorite friends, Ratty, Mole, Badger, and of course, Mr. Toad. Okay. Miss Barbara needs to do that high voice. Okay, Miss Barbara?
Which high voice?
For Mr. Toad.
Oh, no, Mr. Toad. There we go. Mr. Toad, yes.
I break Laura up.
We need a little respite from the dreary day. We're recording now on January, what is it, the 17th or 18th?
18th.
And the sun's come out a little bit, but it's kind of a gray day. So it's a little bit of sunshine in our day. Oh, here's our wonderful music.